Hi. Oop.
Oh.
Okay, so that's me turning on recording
Okay.
so that you know that you're being recorded. And of course, to follow on all of these legal things, we have to make sure we get covered because Academy.
Right.
So we are interviewing you for the oral histories in the U of L Library Oral History site. As part of that, after the interview, I'm going to forward you a consent form that will need to be signed so that it can be posted to where people could read it. I'm not actually sure if the video or if the conference itself goes on there, or just it's like a Studs Terkel write-up of the oral history.
Right, okay.
So that will be sent afterwards, all that jazz. So first things first, Bronwyn wanted me to say hi to you.
Hi, Bronwyn.
I'll tell him we said hi back on Monday because I think he's already headed home for the day.
Okay, cool.
So, to start, we have the. I actually do know some of these answers because Bronwyn liked to give us briefings of all the people he knew. Like, oh,
Oh, okay.
and she did this and this, and there was this time this happened. But
Oh,
for the
gosh.
interview,
Who knows?
when did you work at the University Writing Center slash clinic? Because was it the writing center or the clinic when you were there?
Oh, no, it was definitely the writing center. I've never heard the word clinic before used in for that writing center. So that must, wow, that's interesting.
Awesome.
I started, oh my gosh, I knew you were going to ask this question and I completely forgot when I started. I think it was my second year in PhD, so 2000. 11, maybe? 14. Or 2012. No, I think it was 11. Because I was there for, well, yeah, I'm pretty sure. So, sorry about that. I can't remember the dates. It's been like a long time. So,
Yes.
because I was, I think I worked there for 1 year as a consultant, and then I was there for 2 years as the assistant director to the virtual writing center. So I'm pretty sure it was 2011 to 12, 12. Yeah, because it's 14 I left. Okay. Yeah.
That also indirectly answers our next question of were you an MA or a PhD student during that time?
Yeah,
Pretty
okay.
much and writes itself. What position? Well, you kind of answered this one too. What positions did you hold with consultant and assistant director
Assistant director of the virtual writing
of the
center.
Virtual Writing Center?
Right. So I was a consultant for a year. So I worked with the dissertation boot camps. I think was one of the first. We were one of the first ones that did the boot camps. And then I moved into the had to apply for and got the assistant directorship for the virtual writing center. So I was there for 2 years, and I was supposed to be able to finish my dissertation at that time because I was working from home, because that's what happened a lot. We didn't have the, I think what y'all have now, which is the you have like rooms and I think in Bingham you have like the basement and everything or something for the virtual, but we didn't have that, so I worked from home a lot, which was sweet, but also had its challenges. So, but yeah, that's what I was, that's where I was, so.
What were the responsibilities as the assistant director of the writings, the virtual writing center?
Center. What I did is I worked with the distance learners. So basically folks that were coming in that were our distance learners are not in Louisville, or they were taking classes from abroad, you know, afar, whatnot. I worked specifically with them. This was before WC Online, so we used TutorTrack, which was a problem many of the times. And so that was my big thing. So I would actually go out to the campuses and do presentations to faculty that taught online courses, and to get them to understand what we did, why working virtually with the Writing Center was important. I also experimented with a project, the virtual dissertation boot camp, which was with a dissertation boot camp that me and another consultant did. It was the first time it had been tried. I don't know if it's been done since, but it was like, whoa. it was there was so many technical things going on, but we only had a few people that signed up for it, which was still good. It was really helpful for them, but it was very challenging. So we also created a video for the Virtual Writing Center, me and another consultant. So I don't, it was kind of a marketing video. So that was another thing. So promotion was a big part of what I did too.
Well then, that is definitely something that is an ongoing struggle, is keeping promoted.
See, yeah, I was, I see it because I worked with Aubrey Cox, about a year and a half of, on my dissertation, and I always saw it's full, constantly full. So, but I was the only one doing these online, online consultations. There were no other consultants that were doing it. So the fact that there are several now is pretty sweet.
Which does somewhat roll into the next question, where they ask, who were the other tutors and were they called tutors? Well, clearly not. This was at the consultant era.
Are y'all tutors now? Because I think we were consultants. I don't remember if we were ever called tutors, but in the two writing centers I've been director of since I left Louisville, they've always been consultants, and we never called them tutors. So
still consultants today. Good. I think it was just a very old artifact.
Ah.
Things like the writing clinic era.
Yeah, no, that's, clinic is one of those triage type of ideologies, which is, we try not to do that. So as you know, probably, so, heal people.
Do you remember many of the other consultants that you worked with at the time? I heard Aubrey Cox, she's still here.
Yeah, I didn't work with her. She was actually my consultant for when I was finishing my dissertation this year and last year. So, I defended in November. So, nice. Yeah, I took a huge, not necessarily a break, but when you're a full-time writing center director and trying to finish your dissertation, it's very difficult. So, she was my consultant trying to push me along. So, I totally remember the consultants that I worked with. Absolutely. They were all my friends. Yeah, PhD and MA students, and I'm still friends with them. So,
how many were there in the program when you were? Just the ballpark number.
Wow, that's a great question too. At any given time, I think that there were probably about five of six of us working, maybe per shift. Might have been less than that. So. I don't know how many there are now, but there were only like three PhDs working in the writing center when we were there. And it was a fluke that we were, because apparently we didn't have enough master's students that came in that cohort. And so Bronwyn said, hey, does anybody want to, give up one of your classes and work in the writing center? And so I was like, yes, I do. So that's kind of how it started, So, cause I had been working in the writing center, my master's institution at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. And so, yeah, when I got the chance to come back to writing center work, I was like, yes, totally. So, and then it's went from there. So I think they've had PhDs in that program since. I don't really remember. I don't know. So you would know more than I would.
Well, I would only know my 1 year.
Ah.
But we have had a few besides just the ones working as ADs.
Yeah.
What sort of training was instituted at that time for consultants?
Well, it was training that I did not do. So I, because as a PhD student, I wasn't required to take the mandatory class in writing center pedagogy that master's students are now have to take. So I didn't take a class, but the ADs, the PhDs who were ADs, they assisted with teaching that course, but I didn't have to take it because I was a PhD. So, I kind of just learned as I went, I think, because I was thinking the other day, if I ever had any real training in my master's program when I was working in the writing center, but I don't think anything more than just a meeting, about, hey, this is what we do in the writing center, but no, like, actual training. I can't think of anything specifically, and certainly no class. So, to say that I taught myself would be problematic, obviously, but it was a real social learning process about what to do and what not to do, I think. And from conferences and shadowing consultants and talking to consultants that were working at the same time as me. But in terms of like actually any like training in terms of academic training, like coursework, I didn't have any of that. Although I do teach a class in it now, but I never.
Best not to let them know that you got away without the class.
They don't need to know that. And I teach a very non-traditional type of class about writing-centered pedagogy. So it's not like anything else because our school is not, our institution is very different. So that's kind of the training, I guess. You want me to elaborate? Let me know.
No, I think the entirely informal, entirely on the job.
Yeah, it was on the job training, I guess. Yeah, very working class, very apprenticeship model. So
does seem to have paid out.
Yeah, I guess so.
Kind of, I guess, roles. Some of these questions are getting well answered by the long answers.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, it's a very natural way to get to the information. Mm-hmm. Instead of this more dogmatic next question of what was the structure of the program at the time?
Oh, of the comp program? Probably the same as it is now. Basically, I came in a cohort of 7 or 8 of us, 6, I don't know how many it was. We had to go through the practicum course, which don't ask me questions about that because I will not give you nice answers. And so, and then we were, we taught at the same time for a semester or a year. I can't remember how long it was. It was a year at least because I taught four sections of comp. So that was how it was structured. And then you could apply for AD positions and the Watson position and anything else besides that, and also conferences and things like that. So, and then you had your comprehensive exams that you studied for and et cetera. So I think it's probably the same type of rhythm as it was back in that. I think I took my comprehensive exams in 2012. So is when I took mine, and then 14 was I supposed to graduate, but didn't. And I took a job instead. So, and then here we are. So. That's kind of the structure. That's how I define structure in terms of what you're asking.
It'll do, I suppose.
Okay.
What population of students did you work with when you were here?
In the Writing Center? Mm-hmm. So, when I was consulting, I worked with a variety of different students. And so I worked with a lot of older students. I'm kind of non-traditional. A lot of my cohort's a lot younger than me. So I felt more comfortable working with students who were older than me. So I worked with a lot of older students, master's level students, non-traditional undergrads. I worked with students. I had on my first semester there as a consultant in my PhD, I worked with a blind student the entire semester, and it was a really rewarding and amazing experience. And I learned a lot about working with students with disabilities. I think I really fell in love with working with personal statements during that time too, because I worked with a lot of students who are applying for the master's in social work program there, and or were working on longer papers for that program just because we found them or they found us. And so that was a really, really interesting experience working with students applying for the same program at school, or a program at Louisville. So with professors they already knew, it was just interesting. And of course the distance learners, obviously, which are most of the time were older learners and people that were coming back to school or working full time. Interestingly enough, the same type of people that I would be later on, working full time, finish my dissertation. But you learn a lot. You have lots of conversations with them about life and things. And they feel like, I don't know, they felt comfortable talking to me about stuff. And I felt comfortable talking to them. And obviously confidentiality, and obviously like there's boundaries and everything, which you know, we definitely, I kept, so did they, you know, it's, we're professionals and stuff. So, there were some times where, one person I worked with, and this was the first time we started doing video chat, because I, with WCM Line, I think it was, and, no, maybe it was two different, I don't remember, but anyway, he was in distance, and he's one of those ones, he did not want to necessarily talk about his work, he wanted to ask personal questions, and I was just like, oh my gosh, so, I don't have that happen very often, but that was really interesting, so, that consultation wasn't very, you know, productive. I had to keep moving him, trying to push him back to, but tell me about you. And I'm like, this is not some kind of speed dating, buddy. So, you know, online. but no, it was a variety. The population I worked with was definitely a variety, but mostly was older students, master students, and some very, very interesting dissertation writers during the dissertation boot camp. So.
Sounds like the dissertation writers and the blind student were particularly rewarding experiences to work with.
I think so, definitely. I actually use a lot of these examples and from my experiences at Lowell's Writing Center when I'm teaching here or while I'm working with my Writing Center students here. So, because I direct a Writing Center, obviously. So it's a, you know, we're talking about specific situations or, you know, why we should be teaching personal statements in the, or not teaching, but consulting in these ways and asking these questions about personal statements. I'll tell them the story of the one time where I had a student come in and she was applying for the social work program at Louisville and it was due the next day. She was working on her personal statement and I'm like, okay, let's look at the prompt, you know, and she realized after we read the prompt out loud that there were three bullet points that she had to answer, but she realized that she thought she only had to answer one of them. Like she, and so we had to work that entire time on, you know, how are you going to make this, you know, answer all three. And she, cause it was due the next day. So she basically had to dismantle her entire statement and rebuild it around two more bullets. And so, but she got in and she brought me a thank you card. It was my first ever thank you card and it was really sweet. And so I talk a lot about the importance of, right, you know, use that as an example to support why the prompt is important when we work with students. So, you know, I always bring up stuff like that, which is really, it's grounding. So.
So if those were the rewarding experiences, were there any particularly challenging or tedious experiences, the difficult ones?
Oh, I'm sure. I think we all have consultations where we leave where we're feeling like, what just happened here? Or, you know, what did I even help with? I feel like, you know, this person has left, you know, feeling even more, you know, that was, I think, when we were doing the virtual dissertation bootcamp where we had to create this entire program. This was, you know, pre-WC Online and TutorTrack is just atrocious. So we were using Google Hangouts and there were just so many technical issues and we had to figure out microphones because there's multiple people and there was reverb and all this stuff. And sometimes it didn't work. And, you know, there was one time where there's two of us working on this and we had to go to my apartment and we had to switch back and forth working with our people student writers because my partner's, you know, computer wouldn't work. And so she came over here to my place. Oh, it was just at the end of it, I did a conference presentation about the process and everything. And, you know, lots of people were interested in how this worked out, but and we did have positive reviews for the two or three people that actually went through this program. But I don't think it's ever happened again because there was so many technical issues and I think it needs to be rethought and reformalized. So yes, challenging. Yes, you know, at the same time as rewarding. So, I don't think I ever had any issues with the Writing Center or any, you know, stories that were like, were really highly problematic. Not at U of L. At other, my institution that I went to after that, yes. But not as an assistant director, so.
Well, I won't pry into those ones then.
Yeah. PTSD.
Well, how did some of these questions are going to sound a little repetitive because you kind of get into them, but that's all right. But how did you approach sessions / working with writers?
How did I approach sessions? As writers, folks feel, you know, like they come in, you don't really know what to think. I approached it as informally as possible. I tried to make them feel as comfortable as possible. And because one of the big things I teach my students, or I try to instill in my students, is the necessity of trust in the relationship between consultant and writer. And if you're just coming in and you're like blank faced and you're, you know, okay, so what are we working on today? You know, tone is a big part of it, but you also don't want to be like, hey, what's happening? How are you? I'm Jennifer. You know, you don't want to be fake, right? So they can tell that. And they also don't want any of that BS either. They want to say, hey, you're my consultant. Nice to meet you. You know, cool that we're getting along. Let's chill and work on this writing together. And, you know, you have to kind of formulate how you talk to people, your body language, dependent upon the person that you're working with. And I think for me, that was, I stepped into it pretty easily for the most part. I had a lot of repeat work, you know, repeat consult, students that I saw weekly. So, you know, we got to know each other pretty well. And once, you know, the trust is created, then you can be a little more informal. Then you can have chit chat before and after more than you would somebody you didn't know. And so it just becomes a trust situation. And so I gauged it. I gauged consultations by body language, by tone, by need, by energies, pretty much. So, which I try to instill in my consultants, but at the same time, sometimes it's hard. It's a habit. You gotta, and they're like, how do you do that? And I'm just like, girl, it takes practice. You know, it's not something that's easy, you know, cause, you just gotta practice it. So that's how I kind of approach it. So.
Sounds like very good strategies that you learned in the writing center.
Yeah. It's approaching people. It's just being conversational and trying to make people feel comfortable and that you are there for them. So I've seen my share of consultants who don't necessarily put off that energy. So not necessarily at U of L, but just in general. So, yeah.
What types of issues in writing did students ask about?
Oh, at U of L, a lot of it was, does this make sense? Do you think this is sounding okay? I didn't get a lot of what would you do here, you know, questions necessarily, which I know a lot of consultants do get. But, you know, just a lot of, they wanted support in terms of that I understood what their point was, that I understood what they were trying to get across. Was it clear? Things like that. I did have my fair share of students that really were like, okay, so what kind of word would you put here? You know, and I think while we all get that to a certain extent, I sometimes feel like maybe I fed that a little bit, probably too much by being a little too directive in some cases, but I'm very much of the practice that of being directive and non, there's a needs to be a good balance of directive and non-directive in terms of writing. And again, that comes with gauging the energy of a consultation. But, so whenever someone would say, well, what do you think about this word? Or, you know, what's a good word? I felt like that was a red flag where I would pull back a little bit and use that as a learning experience about, you know, I don't know, I have some ideas, but why don't we go to this thesaurus.com, you know? And cause I, you know, some people are like anti looking things up like in thesaurus, but I'm so pro thesaurus because I'm terrible at word games and stuff like that. I cannot think for my life I can't save my life in like Scrabble and stuff. So it's like, let's use a thesaurus and let's use it well. You know, let's see how it works. Let's figure out some words. Let's try some different words and see what happens, you know, because that's how you increase your vocabulary. So, yeah, that's kind of how I approached it sometimes.
And so with that in mind, what do you think the Writing Center did effectively in terms of teaching writing at that time? Was teaching writing the thing that was being done, or was it more something else, you'd think?
I think it's how you define teaching. I try not to think about writing centers as teaching writing, just because that can, especially in my institution now, it becomes problematic in terms of writing the disciplines and stuff. So, and we're you know, our consultants are from a variety of different disciplines here. So I don't know necessarily if I would consider it teaching writing. I would consider it more as a facilitator of knowledge, because while I didn't necessarily, I feel like that anyway. So it was a lot of providing feedback and thinking, okay, well, this is, you know, using reader response and them saying, you know, oh, so that's not what I meant. Really what I meant is this. And it's like, yes, that, you know, that's exactly what I'm, you know, it sounds great. That makes much more sense. And it's, you know, getting across what you want to say here, which is not getting across what you want to say. And so I don't know. I hesitate to say that I was a teacher of writing. I just don't think that that's the case. So I think it's definitely facilitator of knowledge. I like that. That title sounds better. More accurate, I think.
Very Socratic.
There you go.
So describe what you remember of the tutoring space in the U of L Writing Center. Like, what was the administrative and tutors' offices like? Did you all have a back room then where you could go in and decompress, or was it more everything in front and hide in the lockers later?
No, it was very, we had a back room. We were on the second floor of the library, and it was right there in the middle. I know that y'all are on the first floor now. So it's a, yeah, we were in the space on the second floor of the library, and we did have a small back room. We had our cubbies that we all had our coffee cups and stuff, and, you know, a couch that was gross. And, so there were no rooms to do any kind of virtual, you know, consultations or anything like that. That was all in Bingham. I think they just created those rooms right after I left in Bingham. So, we would all sit back there and do homework until Robin called us on the phone. And I can tell you so many stories about that. So, gosh, for me it was, oh gosh, I don't know if Robin knows it was me. I feel so bad, but I don't really. But so Robin had this habit of every time someone would, you know, for like the top of the hour, right? You know, that's when the students came in, and she would call back to that back room every time someone came in for a consultation, right? So you could have a phone call, you know, hey, Ashley, your person's here, or hey, Jennifer, your person. It's like, she would call every 2 minutes, and it was just like so rattling and nerve-wracking, because that phone would ring like every minute, every 30 seconds for like, you know, 5 minutes. And it was, I don't remember if I went up there and asked her or if I asked one of the 80s to say something at that time, but I was like, can you just have Robin, please just make sure, you know, everyone gets there and just make one phone call, you know, at the hour, because it's just like so irritating, that phone ringing constantly. Just, I don't know. But I also have a problem with certain sounds, and it really is irritating, and anxiety makes that even worse. So it's a, I don't know if she still does that, and I don't know if y'all are even in a space that requires that anymore. So, but yeah, that I think she did it. I think she changed at least for a little bit. So, but, I also feel like I might have been the only one that ever cleaned that damn consultant room. Oh my God, it was so disgusting. So disgusting. People would just leave like food and stuff everywhere. There were times when I would come in after to do shifts. excuse me, allergies. Someone had left coffee in the coffee pot like overnight, several nights, and it was like it would be growing mold. It was just the most disgusting thing. So I think there were times too, and Bronwyn would get pissed off about that too, but I may be making that up. I don't remember, but I just, yeah. But yeah, that room was it was interesting. We, oh my God. There's another story, but I don't know if I should tell you that story though, because it's not that big of a deal. I don't know if you're going to be interviewing this person. So, when vaping became a thing, but we had a consultant that was, you know, that decided they were going to, you know, it was cool to vape in the back room just because it's not cigarettes, right? I think it really freaked people out. I know it freaked me out, but I didn't say anything. So, but I know it freaked some people out because that was banned, and they were I think she got this talked to or something like that about not doing that anymore. But that was very interesting to have someone vaping in the back room, like while they're working on the computer. So, but yeah, that was very quickly quashed. So, but yeah, that's kind of what I remember about the space. I'm sure there's other things, but those are the big things right now. I forgot about until now.
I can tell you, they've only slightly refined the phone. Now, when the phone call occurs, the front desk, whoever's working, is calling back to tell us whose writers aren't here yet. And we just assume everyone else's are.
Oh.
But that can still mean 30 seconds later, we get a phone call saying, this person's writer has arrived. And then 30 seconds after that, the last person's writer has arrived.
So it's kind of a bad... It's improved a little bit. So yes. Maybe... But, I mean, it was crazy. It was... That is the most... That was so irritating. That's all I'm gonna say. Anyway, yeah. Those are some stories for you. About the space, anyway.
Oh. Did your work in the University Writing Center connect to your teaching, coursework, or scholarship at the time?
Well, it was a course release, and so, you know, I worked for, I think it was 10 hours. I don't know. What do master's students work? Are they 10 or 20?
20.
Okay. So, yeah, I worked 10 hours, and that was one course release, I think. It was 10 or, well, yeah. So that's how, I mean, that's the only connection I could say. But it was never something that I mean, I did not write my dissertation. I did not do any research involving writing centers whatsoever. So. It was nothing like that. And then here I am. So I think that kind of happens sometimes with people. They just fall into the work and it's not something you ever expected. So, but yeah, it was not ever connected to anything like in terms of like being my research. No. So I did some, I did some conference work with it and stuff like that, just explaining the virtual writing center. Cause it was kind of a new concept at the time. And so, like just kind of showing people what that was about and discussing some of the, the pedagogy involved and technology involved, what worked, what didn't work, projects that were being implemented, virtually, it was interesting to people. So now it's a big thing now, and it's a growing part of writing centers. And interestingly enough, I don't have that here at my current institution because we're small. So, but yeah, maybe someday.
If it didn't connect to your teaching, coursework, or scholarship, did your time working at the Writing Center influence it with the way your schedule would have been set or with working with student or working with scholars and students and writers?
Well, I think it influenced how I do my job now, for sure. It was definitely a practice. It was a, habit forming. The way that I worked with people and how I taught people the importance of working, one-to-one with writers and also virtually, because I mean, there's a different pedagogy when you're responding to student writing, when you're writing and sending them the paper than it is, talking face-to-face. And there's pros and cons to both approaches, especially when it comes to, conversation and dialogue about things. So, I think more than anything, it probably assisted me in creating relationships with people in writing centers. So I think that it was, now that I think about that, so one dissertation boot camp I helped at, I met a guy who, I was working at U of L. I met a guy who was working at Berea College. He was, he was in the PhD program at U of L, but he was the career center director, career services director at Berea College in Berea. And I was assigned to him. So we worked a lot together on his dissertation. And that was the same time as I was debating on whether or not to become, basically quit the PhD program or continue on with my doctorate. I was at that level. And Bronwyn doesn't know that. So, but so I was making a decision on whether I was going to leave or if I was going to stay. And stay, I mean, not finish my dissertation, just take a job. So I met him, and he was at Berea College, and he's like, you know, our director, our writing center director position is going to be open soon. You would really be a really great candidate for it. And so I decided to apply and got an interview, and then I got a campus visit, and, you know, he was on the search committee. and then I was hired, and that's where I was for 2 years. So I was basically built that program back up before Amy Nichols took over. So that's kind of the influence I think I had in terms of, you know, people that come into your life for very different reasons. And he did, for a very specific reason, which changed my life. And he doesn't know that. And he probably like be all blushy if I told him that. It was a pretty big deal, because that changed the course of everything for me. There's that.
So who were the administrative staff when you were working at the Writing Center? The director, assistant director, or directors? Administrative assistants?
Bronwyn was the director. Adam Robinson was the assistant director. And the ADs were obviously in and out. I don't know if you want to know who they were, because I don't know if I remember who they were about me. Ashley Bender was an AD while I was the assistant director of the Virtual Writing Center. And I don't remember who else was, honestly. I think it was Jessica Wink, maybe, came in while I was there. She was the assistant director for a while. So Ashley was in my cohort, so I definitely know that she was part of it. But that's as far as my brain goes back.
What do you remember about working with any of these people?
I remember Ashley helped a lot with teaching the Writing Center pedagogy class. She was the one who really started the How We Write blog or Instagram post. I'm not sure exactly. I think it was a blog at the time. It was like, find someone on campus or in the community, ask them 5 questions about writing, and then it'll be posted. So as a blog or Facebook or something, I can't remember what the social media aspect was at the time. And I don't know if y'all even do that anymore. Do you all do that still? The How I Write, that's what it was called.
We have a blog now, but it is largely drawn from the Writing Center consultants themselves. Mm. I do not believe that program of wandering around and fetching questions is still active anymore, I'm afraid.
Okay. It might have started the blog situation or, you know, something. I don't know exactly. It's interesting. So it just made me think of something else completely not related to your question. But anyway, maybe that'll come back up again. That's all I know about the administrative people. And Robin, but I consider her administration. I'm not sure if she's there or if she retired yet. Or if you know who Robin is.
No, sorry.
Oh, okay. She's a front desk person.
Yeah, it's Amber these days. Did you know Bronwyn hates pickles?
No, I don't think I did.
I'm surprised. That became very clear to us early on.
What happened? I don't remember this.
We have food in our back room too. And part of it came to be that some of us who have Sam's or Costco memberships would occasionally just bring back big things of long lasting food stuffs as we need decompression food to take of it. And I brought back a big jar of pickles. And he simply insisted that it always be kept closed if the pickles were not currently being eaten, and that whoever had pickles keep their distance from his office.
Are you serious? I never realized that.
It has sort of become a slight joke we have, but.
Okay.
If this was a commonly known thing or just came up because of my ridiculous jar of pickles.
I don't know if it's been, if it's a common thing. So I never knew it. I didn't know. Okay. That's funny.
How did the Writing Center change during your time working there?
Well,
so obviously the Virtual Writing Center.
Well, that was, I think it was, I was the maybe third Virtual Writing Center person. So I don't really remember exactly the timeline. And I'm sorry, a lot of my questions are, I don't remember, but it was a while ago. And, but it's, as far as I know, obviously there's been a lot of change in terms of the location. Cause I remember, you know, when I was there, Bronwyn was, I mean, they were working with everybody trying to get that, you know, move to the second floor. I mean, the first floor. And I was there during that whole initial part of that process. So I understand exactly what he was going through because I just went through that here at my institution, moving the Writing Center. So I told him when I saw him last, I'm like, I never want to go through that shit again ever. And he's like, I don't blame you. Neither do I. So many things, but, changes. I mean, the virtual, obviously. Right. And, just trying to get more, you know, involved with the distance learning folks. I think that's really the biggest change that I saw, but I don't really have knowledge of what was there before me. Oh, we did go through trying to get rid of TutorTrack because that was a colossal failure program. And so getting WC Online, I'm so jealous that they got that after I left, like the year after I left, because it's just a better program. So that was a big change too for the people that came in after me. So. And then you got the virtual, you know, rooms in Bingham that I didn't have either. So, but that's like structural things that changed. So in terms of pedagogical things, I'm not too sure. So.
Well, Bronwyn mentioned to me that while you were the third person running the VWC, you were the first non-faculty doing it. It was the transition point. The previous people running were it was a staff position done by professors and that you represented. It's what made you so important for this oral history. You represented the first time the Writing Center, the Virtual Writing Center, became really part of the Writing Center and not just a job held by some tenure track professor.
Really? I don't know if that's right. I think, really?
I only know what Bronwyn tells me.
If that's the case, I did not know that. Because I thought there was somebody there in that place before me who was another student. So, oh, okay, cool. I honestly did not know that. So maybe that's why I had a lot of leniency in the things I did. And I could try lots of different things out.
Because their first impression, it's the Virtual Writing Center. It's tenure staff. Don't tell them what to do. And you get that aura they don't know.
I had no idea. I don't know if he's right about that. So... Because, that's interesting to know. Okay.
I'm afraid I only know what I'm told on that one.
Okay, well, I seriously was, you know, not the first person in terms of that decision. So, okay. Well, we did a lot of work in terms of getting folks, you know, on board with what we were doing, you know, the synchronous and asynchronous. We did a lot. Started out a lot of asynchronous. I did a lot of looking at papers and providing feedback for a lot of different disciplines and classes. The end of my second year did we really start doing more video. So that was the only, you know, once we did the dissertation boot camp, once we started to do more of the, and that was the first time that we started doing video, and that's that was it WC Online or was it TutorTrack that we were using? I can't remember exactly, but I'm pretty sure it was TutorTrack or Google Hangouts or something, because I was not there during WC Online's, you know, when y'all launched that. So that was right after I left. I'm like 99% sure. So, but yeah, maybe that's why everything was so, you know, challenging in terms of, you know, buy-in and people were really interested in things because it sounded very new to them. Maybe that's why, because I was the first one. Didn't know. Who knew? You educated me today on my position.
So we've touched on this a lot. It's probably one of the more important questions given the unique position of what technology, if any, was available or used within the center How was it used for writing for administration?
Okay, so the technology that was in the center, we did have some computers, desktop computers. I think my second year was the we finally got iPads. We had five. And I have a very small story about I don't remember what happened or what part of the year, but it was in a very busy part of the semester, and all the iPads all at one time. These are new. This is new tech, okay, in 2013, 14. And so they all decided they wanted to update all at the same time, right? So, and you had to do a bunch of little things, click-throughs to get them to update. And Bronwyn was like, I just don't have time for this. And so I was like, do you want me to take care of it? Because I can't. He's like, if you want to, just that's fine. So I'm like, click, click, and they're all updated and stuff. And so it was just like this big thing about updating iPads that was, it was, I don't know. It's funnier knowing what happened than telling it. So, but again, technology does something, and it makes life easier, but also more difficult in certain ways. Obviously, as you know, our relationship with Skype is not the best. And so the iPads were new. I don't know what your iPad situation is now, or if you have them still or anything like that. But so that was a new thing, and they started using them in consultations more and more. And like I said earlier, we didn't have any kind of tech necessarily, like rooms to do virtual, because we didn't have a lot of, you know, virtual like video calls. It was mostly all asynchronous. And so I did everything from home. I used my own home computer to do that. Sometimes I would come in just to make contact with people and use one of the computers in the office on maybe like once a week, twice a week, because I needed to get out of my house. And it just depended. But I had to share it with somebody, and that person didn't realize they had to share with me, and then that was a thing. But anyway, that's another story. So, but I think y'all have a lot more space and ownership of things now. So yeah, that's, and then of course, TutorTrack. Can we just not talk about that? How's WC Online going for you? Is everything okay? Working well?
It's a fairly straightforward and reliable program, it seems. The video appointments are easy and quick to set up. It's just click to join and then you're in the conversation.
Right.
And it's mostly, if things go wrong, it's the writer just doesn't show up because I don't know, they forgot their appointment. Their tech side didn't work. But on our side, it's very simple.
Yeah.
Hit button, have a conversation.
Yeah. There was I don't know if this is a technology story or anything, but it's a mistake that I made, and because I was lazy, I think. And there was a whole semester we were using TutorTrack where I did not log a single client report. I don't think anyone ever noticed that it didn't happen. So I had to go through and actually log client reports after that. But I mean, and we're talking, I didn't do a single damn one of them. And I just guess I just didn't feel like it was necessary. It was never something that was instilled in me as being necessary until I got the email that said, I'm doing this many client reports. I was like, oh, I guess I should have done those. So, but yeah. And now, I mean, I am almost like, I have no issues with my consultants doing client reports. They all do them consistently. So, which is really interesting considering. Considering my background with client reports. So anyway, there's that.
We've established it was using TutorTrack at the time. Was that the primary way students signed up for appointments then?
Yes. And they could not go online and sign up, I don't think. I think they had to call and Robin had to put them into the system. I think. You might have to clarify that with Bronwyn, but I don't think that, or could they? I don't know. But that was the primary one. And it always had technical problems, always. And it was always down. There were missing appointments, and it was incredibly expensive software. So that's after, I think, so many, and I think we had consultants that actually wrote an academic article about TutorTrack too, and the problems of it. I can't remember what part that was at, but yeah, right after I left, we got WC Online, which has really changed a lot of things. So, yeah, that was the primary tech at the time.
Were there still walk-ins?
Yes. Definitely. Definitely still walk-ins. Lots of walk-ins.
Were walk-ins more common because Tutor tracks unreliability and difficulty to execute?
I can't answer that yes or no, but we did have lots of folks that came in and said, hey, I have an appointment, and they weren't on the system. And
or, oh, no.
Yeah, or there was some kind of glitch. There's always that. So it was just a terrible program. And so things would go missing. It would go down. It was, yeah. So, but yeah, walk-ins were pretty common. And I'm not sure if y'all do walk-ins now, but or if you even have time to do walk-ins, if there's even the availability for that with how busy y'all are. But yeah, there's still walk-ins when I was there.
We have them on occasion. Some people don't like to use the internet, and sometimes we do have enough time. They're just not near, you know, midterms and finals, when if you didn't plan ahead, you don't get an appointment.
Right. Yeah. Same.
So you've mentioned that you set up the dissertation boot camp. Was there
a virtual
virtual dissertation boot camp? Was there any other works outside of the usual consultations that you did for the Writing Center, like class presentations, workshops, creating handouts, or reference resources?
We did workshops with faculty on the Shelby campus, because a lot of the faculty that we work with online were out at the Shelby campus. And so we would do, meaning I would do once a semester. I thought there was somebody else, maybe Adam went with me. There was always two of us, I think, that went out there and did presentations and workshops with them about what we do and what we did. And there would be handouts involved with that, and how to contact me to do, you know, presentations if needed be. But I mean, they're all online. I teach online, so there's not the necessity for a presentation in the class. So there was that, and I also helped with the actual dissertation boot camp, which is the one that's face to face. So which was that's where I met the person that was the career services director at Berea, you know, and also met a variety of other people doing that, because I did that for a couple years. The face-to-face one. So that was a fascinating programming, and doing the marketing videos and stuff like that. But other than that, I can't really think of anything else I did in terms of projects. That was enough. It was a lot.
That does sound like it.
Yeah.
Well, we're sort of grinding through all of the more specific questions. Mm-hmm. So now we reach truly the general final ones of, firstly, do you have any copies of any photos or documents that you would like to share? You don't have to, like, pull them off your desk right now, but things that you would be interested in seeing added to a grand oral history of the University Global Writing Center.
I'm sure there's something somewhere that I can find.
All right. And finally, is there anything else you remember that is important that I would ask about? A fun story, a weird anecdote, a historical footnote you believe should be in the historical footnotes?
I think that, I mean, I thought about this while you were asking me these questions, and I was Nicole Dugan's director, Writing Center director, when she was at Berea College as an undergraduate, and I don't know if you know her or not. Yeah, I'm sure you do. Okay. So, yeah, so when I came in, you know, she was sophomore, junior, or something like that, and we worked together the whole 2 years I was there. And, you know, really, she's an amazing Writing Center person, and she will make an amazing director if that's what she wants to do someday. But it was just, it's really comforting, in kind of like, in a way, to know that someone that you have worked with and, you know, has tried to push through a process and a, you know, an educational experience, that they go to the same institution and have the same types of experience as you. And because we talked a lot about experiences at Louisville that I'm sure, you know, were not always the greatest. And so so it's just really nice to see, you know, someone that you've had an influence and you've had a suggestion, you know, towards someone's life goals. And so, you know, it's just nice to know that she's out there doing the things that she loves because of the, hopefully somewhat, you know, influenced by, you know, the work that we've done together, you know. And so I hope that more like relationships are formed at, you know, because of that, like Louisville being a, you know, the nucleus of relationships like that. So I don't know. I thought that that was something that needs to be added. And I don't know if you're talking to her about the oral history or for this or not, but yeah, again, none of that relationship would have ever happened if I hadn't been, you know, put into a dissertation boot camp with one person, you know, who was working at Berea at the time. So I wouldn't be here at the institution I never would have thought I would be at if it wasn't for the Writing Center at Louisville either. So, and now I'm about to potentially host our regional conference for SCWCA here. So whoever would have thought that, you know, from me basically saying, sure, I'll work in the Writing Center, Bronwyn, one semester. You know, I would be in this position. It's like this crazy butterfly effect or something like that that never would have expected. So, and who knows what how it's influenced other people's lives. So that I don't, you know or I'm not in contact with anymore. But I think a lot of folks that, you know, graduate and have been working in writing centers or an AD in a writing center are doing some type of work or at least are influenced by the work that their writing center does at the campus they're at now. So, yeah. So that's what I think anyway. Anything else?
That's all the questions I had on the sheet. And any of the bonus questions I had thought of kind of got covered in, well, with very open-ended questions, one often gets the answers to other questions as part of the open-ended question.
Right. Yeah, that's how I do it too. So, yeah, but I don't know. I don't have anything else necessarily right now. I'm sure, I mean, I honestly would never, I would, without Aubrey Cox, I probably would have never finished my dissertation. So, I mean, the Writing Center at Louisville has had significant influence in my life, probably more than I'll ever know. And so, I mean, in terms of relationships, professionally and personally, I always think, okay, what would Bronwyn do in this situation? You know, I mean, I should have like the bracelet, right? So, because that is like this unintentional mentorship that he probably doesn't even realize and that he's effect he's had on me. And so there's lots of different ways that people in the writing center itself, and the work that we did at Louisville, how it's influenced how I work as an educator and how I am as a person professionally and personally. Because I look back at, you know, 2010 when I came in as a PhD student, how different I am now. How completely different my thought processes are. So, and how I view people and students and educators. So I also learned at U of L what kind of educator I did not want to be. And that was just as influential. So yeah, not the Writing Center, but at U of L. That's about it.
I learned my running gag in the military was you can learn as much from bad leaders, maybe more. You can learn from good leaders.
No, I absolutely 1,000% agree with that. So, yeah, there was it was a lot. So, and I don't think it's that different now, but considering what I know, but or what I've heard, that it was pretty. There was a lot of bad when I was there in the program. So,
I think it's half inevitable in academia.
But, you know, true. That's fair enough.
Yeah, there are some brilliant researchers who are awful teachers.
Totally.
Some brilliant academics who can create compelling articles, but who should not for a day be trying to teach other people things in a room. You have fantastic teachers who struggle writing. Publishing. Yeah, I was like, I don't want to publish an article. It's terrible, but all of my students love me and become great academics because of me. It's hard to find people who are perfect at all of these.
Right.
Yeah. So sometimes we just have to end up in a class with the brilliant academic or the brilliant researcher who's.
Yeah. I totally understand.
Who's doing their best? We'll be generous. Well, I would like to thank you for your time.
Yep.
And your willingness to be a part of this program. I think I will be emailing you the thing that needs to be signed. I believe it can be signed digitally, but honestly, I'm not 100% sure myself. I'm sort of winging parts of this process. But once again, thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure. They're transcribing it will probably be less of a pleasure.
Oh, I've done that. It's going to suck for you. Sorry. Just do it online. Pay someone online to do it. Not a grant.
Go to Fiverr. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you too. And let me know if you need anything, okay?
And a wonderful weekend, too, because it's Friday.
It is. All righty. You enjoy the weekend. Thanks again. Yeah. Okay, bye.